One of the assumptions we make today is that because we're living in the so-called information age, information is more freely available than ever before. It's all online, right? Wrong, according to Nobel Prize-winning physicist Robert Laughlin. In a book called The Crime of Reason and the Closing of the Scientific Mind, Laughlin makes the case that the most valuable information is increasingly classified or privatized. Oh, sure, there's lots of free information out there, but how much of it do you really want? As Laughlin told Steve Paulson.
There's a lot of information available now. Most of it, however, is not useful. And therein lies the rub of the matter. It's the economic value of information that's changed. In the information age, it goes without saying that there's going to be less knowledge because when you commoditize things and use knowledge as your currency, it has to become dear. So the kinds of knowledge with which you make your living are becoming more scarce, and the kinds of information with which you advertise are becoming more plentiful.
Give me some examples of this. How is knowledge becoming privatized and becoming secretive?
The familiar example to everybody is word processing software. So when I went to school, we learned to read and write. That's a technology with which you can communicate with any other English speaker in the world. Now, the technology of communicating with someone else is proprietary. It's a computer program that you must buy, and the price you pay for this particular convenience is that it becomes illegal for you to know how certain things work. Not only that, it becomes illegal for you to figure it out for yourself. So, for example, if I understand some communications protocols and I write them down on a piece of paper and show you that piece of paper, I'm in violation of the Digital Millennium Copyright Act.
Okay, I don't necessarily follow this. Okay, I have to pay something to be able to use a certain software program so I can do word processing on my computer. Frankly, it doesn't seem like that big a deal, and maybe a small price to pay for being able to use a good computer. How is that really restricting the knowledge base?
You're asking a very big question, which is, what difference does it make if technical knowledge is sequestered? I can just buy it. A canonical example is the person up in Oregon who wrote a computer program to control his electric trains and promptly got sued.
Why?
Well, because the concept of controlling your train with a computer had been patented. There are now attempts to patent the entire idea of internet learning so that if you want to teach somebody something over the internet for profit, you will have to pay a licensing fee to the people who invented internet learning.
That seems just absurd.
Lots of things in the patent business seem absurd, but are absolutely not absurd. They're deadly serious. They're $100 million issues.
Now, there are some patent laws, or at least there are ways that the patent law has been interpreted recently, given new technology, especially new biomedical technology, that frankly just don't really make sense to me. For instance, certain parts of our bodies can be patented. I mean, the discovery of, for instance, gene sequences.
Gene sequences are the very egregious example. There are notorious examples in the literature of medical research in universities that's blocked because of a patent position of a company or an individual owning, let us say, for the sake of discussion, a gene sequence. So you can't do research on that without paying them a licensing fee. One of the reasons I wrote Crime of Reason was precisely that I was worried about that. And I think we have collectively already decided that human beings don't have the right to know anything they wish to know or figure out anything they wish to figure out.
Is this new, this kind of thinking? I mean, that we're sort of giving up on this right to know things?
What's different now is the magnitude. The U.S. particularly has gone through a severe period of deindustrialization when we've shipped out manufacturing capability and left the knowledge base. Unfortunately, the side effect of that is that knowledge becomes more valuable, and that in turn means that it has to be more scarce. Because when you have a valuable thing, you must make sure that other people don't get it unless they pay. So what I think is the answer to the question is the decision to become a deindustrialized society has the rather upsetting implication that we're necessarily becoming an ignorant society.
Now, you said that knowledge can be dangerous, and this is probably especially true when you're talking about military secrets, and this is where things get kind of interesting when we're talking about this whole question
Sure.
of sort of what is openly available, what's not. For instance, the technology of, let's say, nuclear bombs. Most people would say that should be limited because it would be highly dangerous if that information got out to the wrong hands.
When I'm talking about this subject, I like to start off with the nuclear example because of precisely what you said. Most people will nod their heads and say, of course, nuclear things should be sequestered because they're clearly too dangerous. You don't want that stuff to fall into the hands of terrorists who will then proceed to blow up a major city. In fact, it's not self-evident. This was a high-level decision that the industrial countries made in the 1950s to make a certain piece of basic knowledge disappear forever. Now, the problem with disappeared knowledge is that it's disappeared, so I can't tell you what it is. If you know a little bit of physics, I could ask you, well, just think a minute, what ought to be there that isn't?
You're talking specifically about how nuclear reactions work?
Well, I can't talk about it. Okay. I'm sorry. I mean, it's true. Unfortunately, I'm Q-cleared, and I can't talk about what I can't talk about. Well, you're laughing, but this need not to be open is central to the knowledge sequestration model that works on the defense side of the formula.
Well, and there's another way that this issue plays out, and that's certain diseases that could be highly deadly if they were turned into weapons, like smallpox or anthrax or typhoid, and you know that terrorists would love to get a hold of some of these things, and it raises big questions about what scientists have access to be able to study these diseases.
Absolutely it does. And what's more, those questions have been asked and answered already. I like to say that our modern genetics is now going through a shakeout period that was like semiconductors experienced in the 1950s, where the certain key important things have been transferred either to the defense part of our economy or to private industry. And what's left is little details.
Well, talking about potentially deadly diseases like smallpox and anthrax, you tell a remarkable story about a war game scenario called Dark Winter that was conducted in the summer of 2001. Can you explain what happened there?
It's a very famous story. It was conducted in Washington, ironically, just before 9/11. Government officials would play a game and understand what would happen if there were a biowarfare attack, a guerrilla biowarfare attack in shopping malls in the U.S. And the experiment took place over 2 days, but simulated a period of about 2 weeks, the opening events of which were the release of smallpox in powdered form in 3 shopping malls in the U.S. The game ended with 40 million infections, and it was out of control, infrastructure was breaking down, and a worldwide pandemic had begun.
And you say that Sam Nunn, the former senator who was the acting president in this war game, basically called it off because it was so depressing.
Right. Now, I have to be careful of my sources here. I heard that word of mouth. When I checked my references, I couldn't find that written reference, but I did hear someone say that the president, the fictive president, said, I don't want to see anymore. This is something that absolutely must not ever happen.
So this is all complicated because I don't want information about how to spread smallpox to be widely disseminated. And yet, on the other hand, I certainly can see the problems if large swaths of scientific research are just shut down.
There you go. Now, the nut of the matter here is empowerment. So scientific things are powerful, at least the important ones are. And so our country and other industrial countries have uniformly decided that certain things are just too dangerous for everyone to know. But the weird thing is that the boundary between what is dangerous and what is public domain empowerment is now being pushed back and back and back. People sometimes wring their hands and bemoan the fact that our poor society is dumbing down. Part of the reason it's dumbing down is because the important things, the empowering things, are dangerous.
What is your fear, let's say 20 years from now or 50 years from now, in terms of how knowledge might be limited?
I've been watching trends in the intellectual life in the Western world for a long time. I predict fairly confidently that we're entering into a rather dark time intellectually. To emphasize it, to get through, I sometimes call it a dark age. That's overkill, obviously. But the trend is really there. And the thing that I realized was that this trend was not the consequence of evil people in the government or rapacious owners of companies. It was ourselves. We have proudly strode into the knowledge age without understanding that when we did that, we have to have less knowledge. And the deeper we get into it, the more knowledge base our economy becomes, the less knowledge there is going to be for free. That's just elementary economics. And so I'm afraid what I see is a continuation of that trend to its endpoint, where there's nothing left but knowledge, and none of it is free.
That's Nobel Prize-winning physicist Robert Laughlin talking with Steve Paulson. Laughlin teaches at Stanford University and is the author of The Crime of Reason and The Closing of the Scientific Mind.